not in a current storyline right now. I don't really have anything that's like on my list or on my stack. I'm like, oh, I have to have this.
Right.
So I've been kind of just picking up random stories and reading them, you know, either online or, you know, out of the dollar bins. But I don't have anything that's like, it's like we were talking about last time. I was thinking about like maybe just grabbing some, like, if I'm spending X dollars per week or month on random shit, maybe I could just save up over the course and at the end buy a nice like Silver Age or Golden Age piece.
Right.
From wherever, whether it's a Sandman, like a Golden Age Sandman, or a, you know, an old Wonder Woman or Sensation Comics, or even, you know, like we were talking just recently for Supergirl for my little one.
Right.
Hopefully, preferably Raw, but man, that one you showed me a minute ago, that's badass.
You know, I recently had a chance to get the 1-6 Sandman from back in the day for like $60 for the set, and I passed it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was at...
you asked me about that, too.
I was at one of the comic book stores out here last week, and you know, the 1-6 set is just $200. Like, why did I pass it up?
It is, man, such a shitty story, too. Like, it is really not good.
But it'll be just a half, you know?
It's cool. Like, I've got issue number 1 and number 6. And I would like to have the rest, just to have it part, because I'm the Sandman nerd like that. But the only reason I care is because it's involved with that Volume 2 Morpheus Dark Gaiman Sandman.
Right.
There's a... I picked it up on eBay for $1 with free shipping. I don't know how that happened. Like, that guy lost. But it was a Wonder Woman number 300. And Wonder Woman 300 was a 300th issue,
right,
like, special edition. But it had characters from the Sandman in it. So they had the yellow costume Sandman, and they had his wife, Hippolyta, who is the character that actually kills Morpheus in Volume 2 over, you know, spoiler alert. But, like, they had that whole, like, dynamic in the book, and it was, like, it was involved. It was an ancillary thing, but it was kind of neat to have.
Right.
Put it, throw it in there with that collection. But I'm a nerd, you know, total nerd that way. Like,
you know, I got
it for $1.
You're talking about Golden Age. I got a Superman number 5 right now that I was trying to
sell. Did you get that from Robert?
Yeah, I was trying to sell last week, and come to find out, it is a, how do you put it? It's a restored that was unrestored back to its original shape.
Oh no.
Yeah. So I'm thinking what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna actually slab a book and roll the dice and see how it comes back. Hopefully it won't come back with purple.
How did you figure that out?
Well, just talking to Bedrock, who they were interested in buying it, and they saw evidence that it happened. So
what do you, like, pressed it and then unpressed it?
No, they had, like, actually had recolored some parts and then took the color out. And there's some spots where you could see that it was taped for a while to try to bind everything back together, and the tape was removed and stuff. So it's, yeah. So I'm thinking the best thing to do is just go ahead and try to get it graded.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, I think what happened is this guy, whoever had it originally, sent it to get graded. It came back with a purple label. So he went ahead, popped it out, and undid the restoration to try to bring it back to its natural state.
That is bizarre. I don't know. Have you heard about that guy? He's like one of the first guys who ever actually cared about comic books. And he's got, if you look on eBay, you can find them from time to time. They're various prices. But essentially, he made some deal with bookstores and newsstands and comic companies and everything, and he got all of their throwaways. And he archived all of the characters, and he archived all the stuff, and he had a store where he sold this stuff, but he also, like, restored the books. And if you can buy, I have to look it up. And once I do, I'll throw it in the show notes. But basically, he would take the edge. He would take the staples out, and he would slit the cover, and he would break the cover open, and then he'd put his own spine with tape and, like, build it up and he would rebuild the comic so that it was, but he would give them to like schools and, and it was like kind of a lend lease library. He did this back in like the 50s. And it's one of the few books that you can find that's been like not only like restored, but like physically destroyed and put back together. That's actually high value because he did it, because he had this massive warehouse full of books, and it got, part of it got flooded, so a lot of them got destroyed. That always happens.
Yeah.
Fangoria, like all their back issues gone. But
God, I missed that magazine. Fangoria was great.
Fangoria's still there.
Well,
it's not as good as it was.
It's not as good as it used to be. You know, I used to get them. I used to buy them all the time when I was a kid. And I was going through the ones at Bedrock the other day. I actually found the issues that I remember getting when I was a kid. It was pretty exciting.
Well, we've been chatting for a while.
Yeah, it's better.
I just realized.
And now it's the fact somebody's here.
Yeah, we're being listened to. So, hey, all of our friendly boys and ghouls, we are Scary Dad and Swamp Thing.
The Swamp Thing.
And we're coming in here not quite live. Some of us are only half dead for episode 10. And episode 10 is about to fall down on December 19th. So you've only got a few more shopping days till Christmas, or chopping days, depending on your mental stability. And in this episode, we're going to give you a nice list of Christmas movies. When the subject for Christmas and horror movies came up, kind of like Silent Deadly Night, I've seen a lot of scary movies, and I've seen a lot of Christmas movies. I haven't seen a whole lot of specifically horror Christmas movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that this was going to be a very short episode if we chose to go that way. Or we'd have to put it off till next time so I could watch all these movies. And next time will be after Christmas, which makes it all pointless.
Right.
And there's not a whole shitload of New Year's scary movies. However, there are a whole lot of Christmas movies that are dark and darkly themed.
Non-traditional Christmas movies, is that like?
We're not talking about Love Actually, folks. Or It's a Wonderful Life. Which, you know, has its moments, because didn't they show that at the end of Gremlins?
Yes. Yeah, they did.
Or, yeah, anyway. So we're going to be talking about some of this stuff. I'm going to give this over to Scott to do our history segment tonight, because he's been a little bit quiet.
Okay.
So if you just want to read some of that, this is some of the horrific shit that's happened on this day in history.
This particular day, okay, and today being December 19th. In 1941, Hitler became the supreme commander of the German army, which is interesting. Of course, that's very well known in our society today. Or day before yesterday, me and my daughter were at Bedrock, and she saw a book that was called, we're at Half Price Books, and it was a book that said Hitler in Comics. And she goes, "What is that?" I said, "Well, you know, back in the day, he was an antagonist in a lot of comic books. You know, you have comic books that have Nazi swastikas on them and everything." And it was actually, you know, I almost picked the book up because I was kind of interested in seeing, you know, exactly how far it did span.
Mm-hmm.
In 1972, this day in history, Alyssa Milano was born, which is very exciting.
She was in that B movie, that Vampire's Kiss, or mm-hmm. You know, it's a long stretch, but it's also a teenage. Or pre-teenage crush. She was in Who's the Boss?
Yeah, you know, she was in that movie with
Poison Ivy.
Yes, Poison Ivy.
Or she was in Poison Ivy 2.
Yes, Jamie Priestley was in one, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yes, Jamie Priestley was in one. But she was in that movie with Mark Wahlberg, where he was a psychotic boyfriend. What was the name of that movie?
Oh, yeah. The Crush.
The Crush or something like that, which that was a freaky movie. Did the junkyard tattoo on his stomach and everything. Yeah. It was crazy, man.
So she was relevant. I just pulled that out because there was a whole bunch of random tennis players on the wiki page. And I was like, you know, I've got to have something.
She's got a whole lot of stuff. She definitely has a career. And on this day in the obituaries, we have V.C. Andrews died in 1986.
V.C. Andrews, that one for that really... it's mostly a... excuse me... excuse me again, it's mostly a girl's book, but The Flowers in the Attic. And yep. Have you ever seen that?
Yes.
That is a frightening film.
It is. It's a creepy one.
She wrote a whole lot of, like, basically, she was kind of the R.L. Stein of her time. She wrote a whole lot of, like, teenage horror fiction. She's most famous for Flowers in the Attic, and Flowers in the Attic being a quite disturbing movie. I don't have an internet access right now. I might be mistaken, but I do believe the film version had Christy Swanson in it from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I'm trying to think. It might have.
Why don't you look that up real quick? That would be interesting to see. I don't know why that if it wasn't her, then it's somebody who looks just like her. And then that might have been one of the many film versions of that.
Yeah. See, my incredibly slow T-Mobile connection does anything.
And if you're hearing a little humming, it's because he's trying to internet near the microphone.
She sure was in it. 1987.
Boom.
There she is. Sure enough. A little Christy Swanson trivia for you.
There you go. She was also in a movie called Deadly Friend. Do you ever remember that?
No, I don't remember that one.
That was a Wes Craven movie. It scared the living shit out of me when I was a kid. It's not that scary. I've seen it since, and it's really not that scary. But it is, like, when I was a kid, it essentially what it is like, there's a little nerd that lives there's a girl that lives next door to this little nerd, and the little nerd builds this robot. Mm-hmm. And it's like true AI. And there's a teenage girl that lives next door, and little nerd has a crush on the teenage girl. Teenage girl's dad ends up killing her, like choking her to death or throwing her down the stairs and ends up killing her. So teenage nerd sees it happen through the bedroom window, and he actually uploads...
I vaguely remember that.
He uploads robot's consciousness into the dead girl's body. Mm-hmm. He merges the robot and the girl. And so the girl comes back to life, and at first she's her, but then over time
the robot takes over,
and the robot saw the father kill her too. So her consciousness, anger at the father with the robots, and anyway, she just goes apeshit and starts killing things. There's this weird, crazy scene where the neighbor bitch that's like, you know, like the mean old bitch next door that's always yelling at everybody. And she just Christy Swanson picks up a basketball and like throws it and knocks her head off. It's great. But man, when I was a kid, man, it was like, man, that shit gave me nightmares. So, well, that was the history segment. We went straight from Hitler
to
Christy Swanson in a forgotten Wes Craven movie. This is the power of the scary dad.
That is correct.
Leave your comments. Throw down your thumbs. You like this. You love this.
Or you hate it. Whatever the case may be.
This is too good.
You know, another movie. Don't ask me why this movie crossed my mind today, but I collect VHS tapes of movies that you can't find on DVD anymore. Mm-hmm. I've recently got a copy of thanks to our friend Andy Gonzalez of Serpent and Rainbow, which I've been looking for forever.
It's not on DVD.
I cannot find it on DVD anywhere. That's one of the movies, one of those hard to find ones. But do you remember Death Race 2000?
Oh yeah.
Yes, I've been looking for that one. That's another one that I cannot find. Now the original one from the 70s with David Carradine and Sylvester Stallone. As kids, we used to play Death Race 2000 on bikes and end up coming home all bruised up and bloody and stuff. It was fun.
Nice. No, I'll keep an eye on my lookout. Honestly, I've been... A couple weeks ago, went to visit my grandfather. My grandfather lives in Brownsville. And it was kind of strange. My wife was on a business trip. This was more than a couple weeks ago. It was a couple months ago. But he's like, I got something for you. I was like, okay. You know, like, he's like, bring a big suitcase. You're going to have to take it home with you. It's like, okay, so fly down to South Padre, you know, fly to Harlingen Drive, rent a car, go to Grandpa's house. What do you got? He's got me two boom boxes.
Awesome.
And what, like, they're not even that old. They're not, like, from the
80s. They're like from the silver, 90s. They're black.
Like, one of them's silver, one of them's black, but, you know, they both have CD players and tape decks. And I was kind of excited because I was like, dude, it's got a tape deck in it. And I don't have any old tapes anymore. But tapes are 50 cents.
I got a bunch of tapes for you.
Tapes at half price books are 50 cents.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I'm all about, like, throwing batteries in there, like, big old C-cell batteries.
Those are D.
Trying to get my girl to, like, not ride on training wheels anymore. I'll throw in some Metallica and let her, you know, like, amp her up while she's riding around the cul-de-sac.
Hey, Sam,
like, just kind of like my dad did to me. But, yeah, dude, like, I haven't had that media in a while.
That is awesome. That is awesome. I'd love to find some of the old ones we used to have, the huge, tall ones with the 8-inch woofers in them and everything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, me and my cousin Mark, shout out to Out of the Box YouTube channel, my cousin Mark, we had one that took two people to carry. One person couldn't carry it alone. And we'd walk around the block with that thing, just annoying everybody. It was fun.
Beastie Boys.
Actually, it was Word Up by Cameo.
Okay.
We used to jam that song all the time.
When I was, I guess I was like maybe 11 or 12, I was in Boy Scouts. And it was right after Licensed to Ill came out. Like, Beastie Boys was, like, blowing up.
I was in middle school when it came out. I remember it well.
And, we went to Boy Scout summer camp. And it was Camp Karankawa. And it was, like, South Texas. And it's, like, off of, like, I don't know exactly where it is. I can Google it up. But shout out to Camp Karankawa if it's still there. Boy Scout camp. And everything's supposed to be like, you know, I don't want to say military, but it's at least kind of formal, mm-hmm. where you're supposed to like wake up to taps while they're raising the flag. But our scoutmaster had to leave for some reason. So like we had just like these counselors and they'd wake us up every morning with that little doot, 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 doot. Girls. Oh, and they'd be out there banging on stuff and they're like, come on, girls. Get your butt out here.
So like, essentially, your camp was like Stripes.
Oh, dude.
When the drill sergeant got injured with a bomb, you guys were pretty much all
over your own. It's like, we're out there, like, do we salute this? Like, what do we do? But every morning, I remember that, going to sleep, because it was hard to go to sleep. I'd be, like, in my cot with this mosquito net, with mosquitoes inside the net. I'm like, dude, this sucks. I can't sleep. Finally doze off. I'm like, doot, 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 doot. Like, fuck. Shut up. Like, it makes me feel good now.
If I can find an alarm clock that plays that tune, I'll make sure to get it for you.
I don't wake up to an alarm clock. So I wake up to a wife who wakes up to an alarm clock. But, man, so let's talk about some movies. Sent you a list. You approve the list.
Yes.
I approve of the list. Let's go through the list.
Definitely some excellent movies to talk about.
So these are the non-traditional Christmas movies. I guess, for contrast, the kind of traditional Christmas movies you're looking at are things like...
Christmas Story.
Oh, yeah. You know, which is great. I'm not gonna dog it, but it doesn't have any zombies. It does not have any blood or guts or gore.
It's funny. It's cute.
It's funny and cute.
Watch it every year.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also some that we just think about that were released during Christmas, that have a Christmas theme in the background, and they're just good.
They're just good to watch. And they do put you in the Christmas spirit. Probably the best of, well, maybe not the best of, but one of the most flamboyantly Christmas movies, as in this is a Christmas movie. As you're watching it, they're pointing out to you that this is a Christmas movie, mm-hmm. as in holy shit, Christmas is happening while this is going on, would be Gremlins.
Yes.
From 1984. You and I were talking about this earlier, about how unnecessarily scary this damn movie is.
Yeah, to this day they have scenes that make me jump every time I see them. For children, it was definitely a frightening movie.
I think this movie came out in 1984. That would have made me 9 years old. And I remember having a big cardboard-backed storybook of the Gremlins. I remember having the toys. I remember seeing the movie.
And a dog named Gizmo.
And being like, like just jaw-dropped, like, which, you know, it's like, oh, that was Jim Henson and Steven Spielberg. I mean, come on.
And everybody wanted to know why. I remember that. Everybody wanted to have their own. But that was, it was a great movie. I mean, it unintentionally scary, for sure.
I think it was pretty intentionally scary. I'm saying it's unnecessarily scary.
Yes, yes. It didn't have to be. Well, actually, it that's one of the things that makes it so great. You know, just to have that fear laid into the background of that movie. It's really, really cool. When the lady gets killed.
Mrs. Deagle?
Mrs. Deagle gets killed. She's going to the that's awesome, master. That is awesome.
the scariest scene, and you know, if you haven't seen this like 36-year-old movie, or even 32-year-old movie, whatever.
Yeah, 32.
There is a scene with Phoebe Cates, who's main character.
Nice,
very nice. Well, we can go on a Phoebe Cates in just a second, but. There's a scene in which she describes why she doesn't believe in Christmas.
It is an awesome scene.
Unexpected. It's really, really a bad scene to have in a kids movie.
It is an unexpected scene, but it is awesome. It is great.
It is probably still like the whole imagery, the whole concept is just like makes that movie is probably one of the scarier. Again, horror is subjective.
Yeah.
It is certainly one of the scarier Christmas movies. I'd put Gremlins up against some of the scarier movies, like Silent Night, Deadly Night, or whatever. It's like, that's formulaic. Like, mm-hmm. there's a Santa Claus guy with an axe hanging over the chimney. Like, right. You know that's going to be scary. You walk into Gremlins.
You have these cute little furry things. They turn into killers.
It's big time killers. And it's got Corey Feldman in it.
Yes.
Really?
Shout out to Corey Feldman. Congratulations on the engagement. He recently got engaged.
Shout out to Corey Feldman. I can't help but love that guy.
Like, oh, he's everybody. Everyone that I've talked to, I know several people that know him. They all describe him as being just a fantastic guy.
I mean, like, I think Corey Feldman's biggest problem is that he's got really bad handlers. Either he is incapable of taking honest criticism, and so therefore fires people mm-hmm. for being, you know, like producers or whatever. Like, or I haven't seen like. Downloaded his movie, like, or he's actually good, but just can't get past the fact that he's known as a child star,
right.
Trying to recapture something.
And he's been in so many just incredible movies.
Oh yeah, and he's actually really good at what he does.
Yeah,
you know, like a few months ago, my wife and I just sat down for whatever reason to watch The Burbs. I don't think The Burbs would have been too. That was even Tom Hanks wasn't even Tom Hanks then. He was still a comedian, right? Like, in that. He couldn't have done that without Corey Feldman being playing that kind of straight man. Like, he's just kind of a stone teenager, like. Shout out to Feldman. Shout out to Hanks. If you pick up this episode, share it. Share it widely. We just want people to listen. That's all
please,
we want.
Please. We'll give anybody a shout out. We're a horse like that. We are there for you. Oh man, but now we're talking about Gremlins 1, not Gremlins 2. Gremlins 2 was a totally different animal.
You know? Gremlins 2 was funny.
It was a funny movie. It was a good movie, but it was funny. It didn't have the fear. I guess because we already knew what was coming.
Right.
You know, it didn't have that scariness to it.
Well, and that's going to make me skip a little bit forward because it seemed, you know, we talked about this too. It's like the 80s had that kind of, because I think Gremlins 2 came out in like 1990 something, like maybe 90, 91.
It was right around that time. I was working at a movie theater back then.
Which would be a 6-year lapse between an original and a sequel. 80s movies, even comedies and kids movies, like think about like Labyrinth and Secret of Nim.
Yeah.
Think about
E.T. had some scary parts.
Well, E.T. was scary as hell. I'm sorry, but that's, you know. I was thinking of E.T. I was thinking about the Jim Henson, the Dark Crystal.
Yeah, Dark Crystal. I haven't thought about that movie in a while.
They're phenomenal films, but they're scary. And this is actually going to be a thing we're going to talk about in the future. We're talking about Dark Christmas movies now. I don't want to get too far off in the weeds because I didn't take notes. And, you know, notes are the secret to success. But Lethal Weapon. 80s movies were hard-boiled, dude. You look at stuff like Schwarzenegger movies, you know, like Red Heat and Lethal Weapon, mm-hmm. you know, like hard-boiled. There is not one thing funny about Lethal Weapon at all, except for Mel Gibson has some charisma and Danny Glover says I'm too old for this shit. That is the joke, and that is the only joke amidst all kinds of blood, mayhem, and tragedy.
Another one that falls in that line is, not necessarily the first one, but definitely another 48 hours, the second 48 hours. I mean, actually the first one opens up with a guy getting shot in the forehead.
Right.
Pictures of him being put up. You know, that was a hardcore movie when you think about it. And Eddie Murphy, you think comedy, you think this is going to be funny. And,
right.
You know, Beverly Hills Cop, that was hilarious, and then you get 48 hours comes out, and that was just an intense. I love that movie. I really, really enjoyed it.
But yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because, again, I said we're not going to talk about Love Actually. Remember that episode of The Simpsons where it's like, oh, well, we have to come up with a new holiday. We're going to call it Love Day. And it's like, I'm the bear who loves to love. Like, anytime holiday movies come out now, that's how I feel. It's like it's just maudlin Hallmark bullshit. It's like the scariest part is the boyfriend with the tattoo or the mohawk. And you're like, dude, you're one of the freaking boy band guys that, you know, like you've got the heart of gold, and at the end your band's gonna be dancing. Like, this is not hard boiled 80s, you know, like,
right.
They set out to traumatize us.
Oh yeah, movies are very realistic. You know, there's just that realism is what they thought would bring, you know, shock and everything. But I just think about RoboCop. That's a whole different animal right there, though.
Well, even that was just, I mean, I can't believe there was toys for that, for RoboCop.
The video game was horrible, too, because you could continue all you wanted. It never had to end. It was a horrible game, God. You know, just, while we're talking about RoboCop, you were, a couple episodes back, the last episode, you were talking about MySpace. I heard the funniest comment by Chris Hardwick, who said that what he's picturing, because MySpace still exists, is that MySpace looks like RoboCop's Detroit. There's graffiti all over the place.
Detroit looks like RoboCop's Detroit.
Right, yes, now. It does.
And you've seen pictures of the crib of Detroit.
Before and after, yeah.
It's bad. My boss actually is from Detroit, and he tries to play it off, like in conversations, like you can say he's like, no, it's not that bad. It just depends on where you go. And then I follow up with, but if you go to those places, he's like, yeah, it's pretty bad. I kind of skipped forward because Gremlins from 84 and then, you know, going to the hard-boiled Lethal Weapon of 1987. So we're going to go back a little bit to probably what I consider the quintessential 80s Christmas movie. It's not really a horror movie, but it is damn scary. It was Die Hard.
Yes, and Die Hard is an incredible franchise. It has outlasted a lot of other franchises, for sure.
So last year, I got into, not an argument, because it's not an argument when you're right. It's a discussion. It's not an argument. She says, and not my wife, my wife's cousin, says, Die Hard's not a Christmas movie. It's an action movie that happens to take place on Christmas. And I was like, well, there are people who are wrong, and there are people who think that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Die Hard's a damn good Christmas movie.
Yeah. The first two were set during Christmas. I mean, the whole thing about the airport was that there was a Christmas rush going on in part two.
Right.
So, it's definitely a Christmas movie.
Got a machine gun. I want to buy the ugly Christmas sweater that says that on it.
But it is a great movie. Bruce Willis is a phenomenal actor. I don't think there's anything he's ever been in I don't like.
Bruce Willis has been in a couple things I don't like. You know, he was never in anything that I didn't. He was never in anything that I hated. Was Alan Rickman.
Yes.
And Die Hard was his first movie. That dude was 44 years old.
Some of them are late bloomers.
Guys, everybody, whatever you're doing right now, even if you don't drink, find something to pour out on the curb for Alan Rickman. That guy was taken out before his time. I mean, dude, really.
He was great in that movie.
He was great in every movie.
Yeah. But it just Die Hard was just... I can watch that movie. It never gets old. That's one that, that never gets old.
It, every year, I have to watch it at least once. It's to me, one of the quintessential scary movies. Yep. Not scary movies. Quintessential Christmas movies. But it's also... I mean, dude, it's still scary.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
It's suspenseful.
It's suspenseful as hell. Like, you know what's coming around the corner. Mm-hmm. They still get you.
And all of them have been. You know, the last one they came out with where he ended up being with his son over in Europe, that one I didn't care for too much. But Up to Live Free, Die Hard, I like them.
Yeah. I saw one and two. After that, I was like, what is the likelihood that this is happening again? Probably not.
Well, the third one was somebody getting revenge for Adam, so it kind of made sense.
So what do you think of... let's see, where were we going next?
Probably the...
Well, I didn't write them down in order. I just wrote them down in I didn't even write them down in degrees of awesomeness. I wrote them down in, these are movies that I watch every year at Christmas time. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote down the dates they actually came out. So if we're running timeline...
That one was 90, right?
1990 would be Edward Scissorhands.
Yes. I was working at the movie theater whenever it came out.
I saw that in the theater. That's an incredible movie.
It's a real good movie. It's dark. It has a lot of mystery behind it. But yeah, it's a real good movie. The
best thing about that movie is the music. I remember I saw that movie in the theater. We were living in Corpus at the time. Or living in Portland, outside of Corpus. And there was a movie theater in the mall, and sometimes my folks would let us go watch our own movie while they went and watched whatever crap they wanted to see. And other times they made us watch the crap with us. So, like, there's a movie called The Milagro Beanfield
War. Oh, I remember that horrible movie.
Dude, it, like, won awards, and I was like, I wanted to go watch Friday the 13th. My parents were like, no.
Normally, if a movie is going to win awards, I don't want to watch it.
And that's it. But I remember Edward Scissorhands, so me and my cousin went and watched it, and it was the most bizarre thing. First of all, the music, from the beginning, opening credits, mm-hmm. which will be the closing credits for the show today, because I've got the soundtrack. It's Danny Elfman. It's that dark Tim Burton dark Christmas music,
right?
And it's just. Just so beautiful.
Boy,
the chorus and everything. And the story itself is great, which the story is kind of a retelling of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
If Frankenstein was met with love instead of...
when he's taken in.
He was taken in instead of kicked out.
Right.
That movie made me realize that Johnny Depp was one of the greatest actors of our time. Pirates of the Caribbean kind of kicked that out because he's not. There's actually a YouTube video, like, I don't know how much you follow Johnny Depp. I never really followed him, but, you know, it's like, there's Pirates of the Caribbean was a big hit, and then everything else he did kind of flopped, and it was like, well, why is it flopping? It's like, here's a YouTube video that is literally 1 hour of Johnny Depp making sounds.
Making drunk sounds.
Where he's like, it's like, that's his, that. Like, those soulful eyes and that earnest look gave way to just being weird.
Right.
Well,
and, Swamp Thing confession, I have never seen any of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
I've seen one. I've seen the first
one. I just never had a desire to see any of them.
I saw one because my wife was like, it's good, you should watch it. And I'm like, it's not bad. Like, it's good. It's not bad. It's not Edward Scissorhands. Edward Scissorhands is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I remember coming out of that movie being so thoroughly in love with Winona Ryder. I mean, you just
said the biggest crush on her. Heathers is what did it for me.
All of us did. Everybody had the biggest crush on Winona.
Heathers came out, yeah, that was...
And, you know, whenever she stole that shit from Macy's and got busted, I made me love her more.
Like, she's hood.
It's not she's hood.
It's like, it's a joke.
I wasn't going to respond with my joke. It wasn't that she was hood. It was that when she was just like, fuck the man.
I'm like, take what I want.
I got the money.
You know who I am.
I got the money.
But you were talking about the music with Edward Scissorhands. Almost had a little Freudian slip there, but music used to set the tone of movies so much. You know, the soundtrack was so vital to setting it. You know, either bringing suspense, bringing terror, or bringing joy. And that was one of those movies that did that.
Yeah.
You know, it was able to manipulate the audience to put them in the mood that they needed them to.
That's so many of Tim Burton's movies.
Yeah.
And even, you know, with Johnny Depp.
Batman kind
of,
doesn't.
Tim Burton kind of falling off himself, you know, just kind of like he found a formula that worked and he keeps, you know, it's like it seems like he's not trying anymore. Mm-hmm. I stopped watching Tim Burton movies after that one with Johnny Depp and Helena Bonham Carter. Which is like all of them for the last 20 years. But they're all the same damn movie.
Right.
And they don't have that same like attention to detail in that craft. But Edward Scissorhands, that's a Christmas classic.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Which brings us to the next on our list, which is strange because there's actually three on the list from Tim Burton. And there could be a fourth, but I wanted to save that for a Tim Burton episode.
Okay.
We could go ahead and just talk about it now, but I wanted to do some research on
that. When you think of Dark Christmas, you think of Tim Burton.
Yeah, right? But it's actually Batman Returns.
Yes.
Who is, in your opinion, 1992 notwithstanding, but from 1940-41 to... Now, who's the best Batman?
It will always be Michael Keaton for me.
It's Keaton?
Because he hit it at that time where it was an incredible, phenomenal movie. Because I'd always, you know, had the Adam West Batman, and then Michael Keaton became my Dark Knight. I mean, it will always be the one that I prefer.
How about the Joker? Who's your favorite Joker?
I would say Jack Nicholson also, because the Joker wasn't supposed to be as serious as he became over time. Mm. You know, he was supposed to be a kind of a goofball at times, but at the same time a sinister goofball. Jack Nicholson did a phenomenal job with that. Yeah.
So I'll accept your answer on Keaton and Nicholson. this is where I fall out, is that my favorite Joker out of all of them would have been Heath Ledger. Just something about that performance spoke to me. And not in that, like, I'm going to grow my hair long and be that guy. Because I was already past that point in my life. I just thought it was a really good performance.
Right.
My favorite Batman was actually Christian Bale, except for the voice. I thought he did a really good Bruce Wayne. I thought he looked good in the suit. I thought he had the musculature. Especially in Batman Begins, he looked, you know, he was solid.
Right.
However, if anybody asks you what's the best Batman movie, the correct answer is Batman Returns. And when they ask you why, it's because of Michelle Pfeiffer, Catwoman.
She was an excellent Catwoman.
Signed, sealed, delivered. Any other debate is just merely wrong.
And the origin story that they added to it in there was great.
Yeah, there won't be a better Catwoman than Michelle Pfeiffer in that latex bodysuit on that roof, flipping and flopping, and, mm-hmm. you know, one of my favorite scenes from any movie ever was about 4 seconds of Batman Returns, where they're at that holiday ball. Mm-hmm. And the Susie and the Banshees song is playing, and she's walking down the stairs, and Bruce is standing on the floor watching her come down, and they don't know, like, who each other are, right. But it's like the music is just kind of hinting of what's going on. So masterfully built, because, yeah, in the next few scenes, all this will be revealed.
Yeah.
But just that building tension and that music and that atmosphere, and, you know,
when they realize it,
they're at a costume party and they're the only two that are not wearing costumes.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing is so good. And it's got Christopher Walken as Max Schreck.
he is great in that movie. He's great in anything. Yeah.
Made a career off of comma usage misplaced. Which is so wonderful.
I love those YouTube videos of Chris Walken reading children's books. It is great.
Good night, Moon.
Good night, Moon.
So if you haven't seen Batman Returns, which I can't imagine anybody hasn't, but you should, you're going to get in the same old arguments. Batman kills a lot of people. You're right. Batman shouldn't kill a lot of people. Why does Scary Dad love Batman Returns, where Batman kills a lot of people, and hates Man of Steel, where Superman kills people, when Superman's not supposed to kill people, but man, Batman gets a pass? I hold Superman to a higher standard than Batman.
He's supposed to reserve himself.
So, Batman's only human, guys. Give him a break.
And we got to give love to Danny DeVito, too, for the Penguin.
Well, yeah. There's no... I'm just thinking that not only is it the perfect holiday movie, it's the perfect Batman movie. That Danny DeVito was a perfect Penguin.
I love Danny DeVito. Always Sunny in Philadelphia is great. And one of the reasons it's great is because Danny DeVito seems to be drunk all the time.
So, I watched... I haven't seen Sunny in a couple of seasons. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe the last two or three. The main people... excluding Danny DeVito, they made that, like, on their handy cam, driving around Philadelphia and just filming shit. And it was so funny that Danny DeVito himself was like, I will produce the fuck out of this. I just have to be in it. Like, how awesome is that? Oh, yeah. You have a veteran of film and television.
That appreciates theater, it so much.
That's like, appreciates it so much. It's like, I will bankroll this. All you gotta do is give me a part. Danny DeVito's like, I mean, obviously he's got money, but he's like lowering himself, being like, I just want to be in your movie. Like, I just want to be in your show.
Have you ever seen Birdman with Michael Keaton?
I haven't seen that. My buddy says it's awesome.
It is an incredible movie, and I love how it obviously ties to his Batman roles. It is really, really cool.
See, I heard that Keaton was kind of a dick about, like, just about everything back in the day. He's like, I'm Batman. Like, he's like, I'm not going to take this indie role, and I'm not going to do these small movies. Like, I deserve my $20 million. And Hollywood was like, eh.
And that's what makes the Birdman movie so good.
Yeah. And so then you got other people like even Brad Pitt, who's probably one of his most appreciated, and like on his gravestone movie is going to be like Fight Club. He took a low paycheck because they couldn't afford Brad Pitt, but right. He liked the material so much that he approached it. And Ed Norton as well. Like, they were both higher caliber actors that wanted the movie so bad that they just did it for what, you know.
For the art.
For the art. And both of them, even, like, Edward Norton was on a Chive podcast saying that he thinks that Fight Club was probably one of the best things he's done. You know. There's an opposite day sort of mentality there. Yeah. It's like, you know...
Well, Birdman is essentially, you know, Michael Keaton coming out and saying that he came to the realization he had to humble himself. Mm-hmm. You know, because he wasn't Batman anymore.
Right.
He couldn't make those claims anymore. He had to move on.
Yeah.
And it's about him trying to move on away from that. It's really good.
He's only just now, I guess, well, he did an Academy Award winning, or I guess it did win awards.
Yeah.
He did, you know, he's kind of come out, but he still hasn't, like, rolled back into things. It's like one of those people that can just kind of roll in and roll out. Like, they're in classics, then they're in cameos, and then they're just, like, whatever, like Bill Murray, who can just, you know, he's just, he's either in the movie or he's not in the movie.
Or he is the movie.
You
know, you mentioned Bill Murray. Another, I'm considering it a true Christmas classic, even though it is a retelling of one, but it's the way they went about with it with Scrooge. I love that movie. Watch it every year.
Oh, yeah.
I have to. I would consider that a non-traditional Christmas movie, because it's technically in the background they're telling the story of Scrooge, but the way they go about it is just, it's awesome.
I asked you to pour out your drink for earlier. Bill Murray's still around, and he's still kicking, and he was so happy when the Cubs won.
Oh, yeah.
He told the mayor to tell everybody else to let their kids stay home from school the next day. And then he had, like, millions of people watching, and he's like, it's a good guy.
He's one of those guys that, you know, one of those top 10 guys I would love to sit down and just have a beer with and just let him talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just shoot the shit with him. Yeah. He's one of those guys. One of those cats.
I imagine he's very much in person, like he is in his movies.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can definitely see that, and he has been for a long time. He, Dan Aykroyd as well. You know, another one that he worked with a lot. They, both of them, I could just see them.
So, let's get into Scrooged. I haven't seen that in. That's not one of my like every year list. I probably haven't seen it in a year or two.
Right.
What is it? What is it that makes you like?
Well, the story is told. Like I said, it's, you know, Scrooge is in the background. It's obvious that it's based off, loosely based off of it, but just the, you know, the characters that are in it, the things that the ghost, the people that get to play the ghost are just what's his name? He used to be in the band. God, he plays the ghost of Christmas Past. Can't remember. He was a singer. He had a band. He had a couple of hits back in the 80s. But anyway, he plays the ghost of Christmas, and he's perfect at it. He's loud. He's obnoxious.
Hugh Lewis?
No.
Dude, I've got a brain fart right now. I'm trying.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look it up real quick. But anyway, the ghost of Christmas Present is this comedian woman with a real squeaky voice that just, you know, keeps inadvertently knocking Bill Murray out and just slamming him. And the Ghost of Christmas Future is just an incredibly creepy Grim Reaper. It has a bunch of souls that live within his body and stuff. It's just a really, Bobcat Goldthwait does it. He has a great role in it. It's scary. It's funny. It just goes up and down. It's definitely the scariest Scrooge movie you'll see. You won't see one quite that haunting, but it has its moments where it's a really, really good one. You say this is Bill Murray.
Oh, yeah.
Can't go wrong. And I'm going to look that guy's name up because I cannot remember his name right now. Because in the 80s, he was real big. He was on all kinds of stuff. See, Scrooged. Everything. Oh, but he had a real big mouth, this singer. I remember that about him very much. Cass.
I'm waiting, bro.
David Johansen is his full name. He was in David Johansen and Harry Smith's David Johansen group in the New York Dolls. And I'm sure he is.
Oh, New York Dolls. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure you will recognize him.
Yeah.
Okay. You remember that guy?
Yeah. He was, That guy, he turned into Buster Poindexter.
That's what I was thinking. That's the name I was trying to remember.
Yeah, okay. I was like, dude,
he plays the Ghost of Christmas Past as a cab driver that happens to pick up Bill Murray when he's trying to get out of the building.
So, yeah, okay. Again, brain farts on things. And I'm tired of brain farts. I don't want to do that.
It comes with age, man.
It does.
I call them senior moments now, so.
So, we're gonna end here in a minute on one of our Halloween classics. It's also a Christmas classic. But if you listen to our episode number 8 about Krampus, I just watched this film. It's called A Christmas Horror Story. And while I said that these are non-traditionals, this is just one that if you can, just drop on Amazon while you can still get it for free. It like I said, it's Christmas Horror Story. It is a horror movie. It is scary.
Is it a slasher or?
It is a, well, not really. Okay. It's a monster movie. Best I can describe it is, it's Have you seen Trick or Treat?
Yeah.
Okay. So where there's multiple stories going on, and all of the people in the multiple stories are somehow interrelated,
yeah.
but their interrelation doesn't really affect what's going on in their particular story. And none of this has anything to do with the actual story other than, first of all, there are really, really good jump scares. There are really, really good kills and a high body count. There are main characters that you just really, really hate and can't wait for them to get taken out, and they get taken out. It's really nice. There is a freaking great twist ending that you're just like, the whole time you're watching it, you're like, what the hell is going on, and how is this going to tie in? Oh my god, that just happened. And the best part is that it's full of William Shatner. He's like the anchor. He's the thread that holds it all together. he's the rug that ties the room together. So, it got 4 stars on Amazon. I agree. Like, it was cool. Legitimately scary. It was funny. It was completely unnecessary. And it was a good, solid holiday movie that, you know, it's no Edward Scissorhands. It's not Lethal Weapon. But it's fucking good.
Cool.
And we're going to go ahead and finish our discussion here with what... Do you believe Nightmare Before Christmas is a Halloween movie or a Christmas movie? Or both?
I would put it in the category of both. It can go with either one. Definitely.
It's still a Tim Burton, so, you know.
Yeah.
Good thing about Burton, when we decided to do that episode, he's got a lot of other movies. Because Sleepy Hollow would have been a good Christmas movie as well, because it kind of fell in. But Nightmare, like, it pissed me off this year. I went to go try to pull down the, 90% off at Walgreens, where I've always been able to, like, take the big-ass haul of shit for, like, oh, it's like $100 worth of stuff you just paid $10 for. Well, all they did was, like, all their Nightmare Before Christmas shit, they just moved over to different shelves.
For Christmas.
I'm like, oh, come on, no, man.
Until New Year's.
So, but... You know, NBC, Tim Burton did not direct it. He wrote it. I've got the poetry book in there that he wrote the actual original poem on. Mm. Danny Elfman music is what made it. Little Nightmare Before Christmas trivia. Jack Skellington has 2 voices. One's a singing voice, one's a speaking voice.
Okay.
His singing voice, I already said, it's Danny Elfman. Oingo Boingo does all of the music from Pee Wee Herman's Big Adventure all the way, you know, to now. Do you know the other voice?
No.
You can't look it up on your phone.
I do not know.
It's Prince Humperdinck.
Really?
It's Chris Sarandon from Princess Bride.
Yeah, I was watching that before I came over here, as a matter of fact.
Humperdinck. He's Jack Skellington's voice.
I did not know that. It's a cool piece of trivia.
It's good stuff. So, you know, I always consider it more of a Halloween movie.
It's more of a Halloween movie, but it can carry over, for sure.
It completely carries over. But it's one of those that you can watch with the kids, you know, When you gotta wait for them to go to bed, because the beginning of Lethal Weapon is that attic chick that jumps off the building and just kind of falls to her death on Christmas. And yeah, that's a little rough for the 5-year-old.
Yeah. You don't need to see the faces of death or anything.
Right. But, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas, it's got a good soundtrack. It's got some toys you can play
It's a good little movie. Definitely. My daughter loves it. That and Coraline, she loves those 2 movies.
But I think about this time, this is the first episode, except for that one episode, which was a guest episode, and we had a very long history segment. We finally pushed one to an hour, so fist bump
nice.
On that one.
Nice.
And we're going to go ahead and leave you with the music for I don't know. I haven't mixed it down yet. It's either going to be Edward Scissorhands or that Susie and the Banshees song from Batman. Either one or maybe both.
I love that when they realize who each other are and they're like, does anyone have to fight now?
Nope. In the meantime, guys, for what it's worth, I'm going to say Merry Christmas.
Yes, Merry Christmas to everybody. I hope you have a great holiday.
Keep it scary.